Milling. When you think of lumber, what does it look like? Where do you picture it? If you depend on a home center or a big commercial lumber yard for your wood supply, chances are you're paying a premium price for sticks or boards that have already been surfaced to specific dimensions. That means you're paying extra for a wood surface that's probably less than mediocre at best, on lumber cut to dimensions you didn't get to weigh in on. When I first learned to mill my own material, I felt such a powerful sense of liberation from the corporate overlords of big timber. Using their inferior products in the past, I could design furniture that could be made only from 1x and 2x lumber dimensions, or 4x4s if I was feeling beefy. If you have the wherewithal to mill your own lumber, by which I mean the space, the means, and the inclination, your creative opportunities explode into myriad choices exponentially greater than anything a home center can offer. The first thing you need to find is a source of rough sawn lumber. This term means that the wood has come direct to you from the sawyer, whether he or she is a lumber mill operator or your great aunt or uncle with a chainsaw cutting trees out behind the corn crib. Your wood needs to be dried until it's cured and stable by the rule of 1 year per inch of thickness. So, if your great aunt Myrtle slices up a walnut tree into 4-inch slabs, those beauties must sit and acclimate for 4 years before they can be relatively trustworthy to become furniture without warping into a shape resembling a potato chip. There is a great lumber yard southeast of downtown LA called Bonhoeff Lumber, and that's where we go for what is called our dimensional lumber. Instead of the miserly world of the 2x4, which actually is a mere 1.5 by 3.5 inches, dimensional lumber comes in thicknesses listed by the quarter inch. So 6/4 would be 1.5 inches thick, 8/4 is 2 inches, and so forth. The most common dimensions are 4/4, which finishes down to 3/4, a popular thickness for furniture, 5/4, 6/4, and 8/4. Bonhoeff often carries up to 16/4 of the more popular woods, like maple, oak, and walnut, for those times when, you guessed it, we're feeling beefy. In another hilarious twist, dimensional lumber is tabulated in units known as board feet. Your home center sells lumber by the linear foot, which means that a 1x4, say, will be priced by the foot for the ease of the customer. That convenience also costs you money. You can slap a tape measure on a board, see that it's 9 feet long, multiply that number by the price per foot, and know what you're paying. Easy, right? This is how those establishments make more profit on wood of lesser quality. A board foot is another animal altogether. It takes into account the thickness, width, and length of a board. The rule of thumb is as follows. 1 board foot is equal to a board 1 inch or 4/4 thick by 12 inches wide by 12 inches long. A 1x12x12 in job site parlance. If you multiply those numbers together, you get 144 cubic inches, and that number is your key to understanding board feet. Given the basic unit of 1x12x12, now imagine a board that's 2 inches thick by 12 inches wide by 4 feet long. Can you tell me how many board feet it contains? If you said 96, you are not right. You might want to check out the charismatic craft of glass blowing. If you said 8 board feet, however, then you get it. Sorry to get so mathy on you, but this is a powerful piece of knowledge in unlocking your woodworking destiny. So one more time. We know that 1 board foot equals 144 cubic inches. With this number, we can discern the number of board feet in any stick of timber, and here's how. Let's take a piece of ash, 8/4 thick by 10 inches wide by 17 feet long. Blech, I got exhausted just saying that. Okay, suck it up, Nick. Magic time. We need to find the mass of the board, just as how we arrived at the number 144 for a board foot. We now want to multiply the thickness, 8/4 or 2 inches, by the width, 10 inches, by the length, 17 feet, times 12 inches equals 204 inches, or 2 inches by 10 inches by 204 inches. That math gives me 4,080 cubic inches. Damn, this is going to be an expensive board. Now, to find the number of board feet in this ash board, I divide that number, 4,080, by the board foot number, 144, which equals, if my math is sound, 28 1/3 board feet. Whew! Now you can be strong like bull and smart like tractor. Here follows some lumberyard etiquette for you. Adhering to this sensibility in a neighborly fashion is very important to the longevity of your relationship with your supplier, so pay close attention. The next step in chasing smartness involves calling the lumberyard and, using your Sunday manners, kindly inquiring about their board foot prices. You have presumably already determined the pieces that you need for your project and added some dimension in every direction for slop. Always add thickness, width, and length to your finished dimensions so you can then mill your material to perfection and give yourself a cushion to make small errors. On top of this, buy an extra stick or two so you can make test joints and/or bigger errors. Now let's say you're buying that ash board from a couple paragraphs ago. You call the nice lady or fellow and say you're looking for an ash board, 8/4 by 10 inches by about 17 feet. Well, they'll tell you if they have anything in that neighborhood and also the board foot price. Let's say it's $4 a board foot. Rounding up, always round up when pricing wood or you'll just repeatedly break your own heart. So rounding up from 28 1/3 board feet to 30, that means your ash board will run you about $120 before tax. Before you even leave your shop, devise your strategy so that you'll know what you're looking for when you arrive. Be ready to ask the yard workers for a size, species, and type of cut. For example, "Hello, Josephus. Pretty smoggy today, right? Hey, can I please look at some 5/4 quarter sawn white oak? Then I also need a couple sticks of mahogany, 8/4 flat sawn if you have it." Now, the reason for this is because the workers are going to have to disassemble giant towers of wood stacked on pallets and organized by species, just so that you can find your few perfect boards. Do your best to make them stack and unstack as little as possible. Once you've prepared your grocery list, then make sure you've put together your lumberyard kit. Gloves for handling splintery surfaces on heavy boards, chalk or crayon for rough marking, measuring tape, block plane, and beverage. Non-alcoholic. Trust me, you'll want your wits about you. Once you arrive, make sure you stay out of the way of the big spenders, the contractors who are ordering thousands of board feet instead of your measly 7 pieces of carefully chosen wood. After the nice person in the forklift brings you the stack from which you will choose your piece, work quickly and efficiently. Using your tape measure, zero in on the boards that are the right size for your project. Examine every side of them. Don't let a slight twist or a flaw escape your notice at this stage, because you don't want to pay good money for that board only to discover that it's unusable once you've cut it open. An extra set of hands is very valuable at this point, since you may end up sorting through an entire stack to find what you need. Be sure to leave the stacks better than you found them. This will keep everybody safe and let the employees know that you respect the hard work they do. Now that you've chosen some candidates, it's time to up the scrutiny. Mark off the lengths that you like and use your block plane to shave away small sections of the rough surface so you can see what the grain is doing. You can also use your plane on the end grain to see how the grain lines up in the pieces you have in mind. Use your crayon to mark out your choices so you don't lose track. Once you're ready to check out, the nice lumberyard person uses a special ruler that measures board feet, known as a lumber rule or board rule, to add up your bill by randomly placing dots on a tablet of graph paper. This is not a joke. The tabulation system is inscrutable, which is why it's important to do your math at home beforehand so you know if it's you being taken for a ride instead of your lumber. We get our slabs and larger quantity chunks from a variety of sources, mostly in Northern California. My main source for years was an incredible character named Harold Seward. Now retired, Harold was a juggernaut of a man who single-handedly wielded an ancient chainsaw made by steel with an 8-foot bar and Alaskan mill. An Alaskan mill is an aluminum frame attached to the saw blade, which allows it to make consistent slices like a monstrous cheese slicer. He knew every nook and holler in the low redwood-covered mountains of Sonoma and Napa valleys, and kept a mental inventory of which trees had fallen where, and also of which ones were being removed because of construction or sickness. He'd show me a stack of walnut slabs, and I'd ask him how dry they were, and he'd raise his eyebrows and rub his face and say with certainty, "Oh, these are dry as a bone. I just cut them a month ago, but the tree was sitting on the ground for 7 years at least." I'm not certain Harold was ever 100% sure about the dryness of the trees, given the amount of territory he covered and the number of trees he had lying about in any given month, so I learned to carry a moisture meter, a cheap implement that can tell you relatively how much moisture the tree is retaining. That said, he never missed by much. Old Harold knew his stuff. At OWS, we look for a reading of 11% or lower to trust that the wood is ready to play nice. Lately, there has been a wonderful development in our neighborhood. Our pals Jeff Perry and Charles DeRosa have launched an urban tree milling outfit called Angel City Lumber. Sorry, I know I'm usually pretty low-key, but I am chuffed about this. Angel City Lumber! We're amazed that no one has really officially been doing this in Los Angeles before now. There are a couple guys with wood misers around, but no business is centrally located so conveniently, milling up fallen trees in the city so that they might be used by woodworkers, as dimensional lumber as well as table slabs. We'll miss the 8-hour drive up the 5 freeway north to Healdsburg in the blistering heat of the Central Valley, but sometimes life is about accepting change. Chuffed. The fellas picked up a Lucas mill a few months ago and have not stopped cutting up trees all over the county. By taking away the middleman, not to mention the commute to get to the middleman, they are able to offer their material at more affordable prices than larger companies. Most importantly, they are giving these noble hardwood trunks a second life, as beautiful furniture, boats, flooring, stringed instruments, you name it. What's more, when the huge masses of wood are saved for another noble round of service, that also keeps them out of the landfill, so if my scorecard is up to date, it reads win, win, win. We had acquired a couple of gargantuan trunks of coastal live oak, talked to Thomas, that were sitting outside the shop for some many, many months. They were awfully good-looking and left the bystander no doubt what it was we were doing in this warehouse, making trees into smaller pieces, but the landlord was charging us for the parking spots they inhabited, so they were getting less handsome by the month. Charles and Jeff showed up with their super-portable mill and forklift, and together, but mostly them, we slice those bad boys up into some utterly gorgeous and damn near usable slabs of oak. If my dad had been here, he would have undoubtedly paid them his highest compliment. By God, those fellas were workers. There were so many colors running through this oak, plus a good deal of intensely graphic spalting, that I took to calling it ham fudge, which became the victorious holler of the day and quite possibly the title of my next book. And now, if you will indulge me in a brief digression, our redoubtable Matt McCucci has written the Offerman Woodshop Pledge. Everyone, please join in. I promise to do my best to keep my tools sharp and honed, to work safe, and to clean up my sawdust at all times, to make things by hand with respect and honor to the spirit of the tree, maintain our loving shop, support my fellow woodworkers, and to respect the traditions of the craft, to work hard and dirty, play John Prine, eat lunch as a family, honk my horn when leaving, and if I sprinkle when I tinkle, I'll be a sweetie and wipe the seedy.